It's all very well and good to say, think positive, or you must have confidence in yourself. But where does that confidence come from? In order to have confidence in yourself, you must first understand for yourself where that confidence needs to be applied, and what changes in your life you need to make in order for that confidence to shine through. For my patient, the key issues that were affecting her were her confidence and trust, both in herself and those around her. Once they were identified, it was easier to work on resolving those issues, but it can be difficult to uncover the key issues. For some people, the negative cycle of thoughts is extremely difficult to get through, and therefore discovering what it is that is sapping your confidence can be difficult. We all have goals and aspirations, and it's the barriers to those goals and aspirations that we need to define. A good way of finding out where those barriers are is to use what I like to call the Wheel of Life. Sounds a bit like a silly 80s game show, but it really does highlight which parts of your life need to be changed. So if you need to pause the recording, go ahead, because I want you to get a pencil and paper, and I want you to write this out. Okay, so I want you to draw an octagon, which has 8 sides. It also has 8 points. And at the top point, I want you to write career. Now, going in a clockwise manner, the next point over, I want you to write finances, then health, then friends and family, then love, then personal development, then fun and recreation, and then physical environment. So you have 8 labels now: career, finances, health, friends and family, love, personal development, fun and recreation, and physical environment. Now the center of this octagon represents 0, and the outer circle represents the number 10. So draw a cross through the circle now. That's right, divide it in half and divide it top from bottom. Draw a cross through it, okay? So in the very center, the lines cross each other, write a 0. Then up by career, write a 10, since as you go out, the numbers increase. In a perfect world, this wheel, this octagon wheel, would look something like this. It would have all 10s all the way around. The reality, however, is probably something quite different. So fill in your own wheel of life. It's a great way of graphically representing what reality is for you at this precise moment in your life. So I want you to go around the wheel right now and write a number next to each of those things: career, finances, health, friends and family. Write a number. Write a number from 0 to 10. How well are you doing in those areas? I had a patient recently who I had do this, and I want to tell you that his circle didn't look much like a circle. In fact, if you tried to put that on a car, the car would not go anywhere. It looked more like some jagged, pointy object. Although he was considered very successful by those around him, he didn't feel happy in what he was doing. This actually came as quite a surprise to him. He was kind of aware that he wasn't happy and content, as he thought he should have been, but he actually attributed this to his career. He thought that he needed to improve himself through his career in order to feel happier. In actuality, career was about an 8, so career was doing pretty well. But it was his constant strive to better his career that was making him unhappy in the first place. What he was doing was pursuing his career and neglecting other things in his life that would have made him a lot happier. He found that he had a lot of confidence when it came to looking after himself and keeping fit, for example, but very little confidence when it came to a social life. He found that he also had a great deal of confidence in his job, but he felt that his confidence was lacking in other areas such as socializing. So take a look at your own wheel right now. If you were to connect all the lines, remember 0 is the center, 10 is the outsides. So I want you now to connect all the lines and see what kind of figure you come up with if you haven't done it already. What is the one area where your wheel could improve? Maybe there's more than one area. But ask yourself the question, what you need to improve in order to get that low number to a high number. The tricky part comes when you find out that you have to commit to the answers. First of all, ask yourself the question, what do I want? Once you have this answer, double check it. Is it what you really want? This process of clarification is a vital step toward bringing positive thinking into your world and empowering yourself. If your first answer was, for example, I want to get promoted, then the answer to the second question should have been, what I really want is to get out of this job. As you can see, 2 different answers to the same question. Now that you have an answer to your question, you can start to think about exactly how you're going to get it. You can start to think about how you're actually going to move yourself to where you want to be. The trick is to not be upset about the answers. The patient I have, whose wheel I illustrated earlier that wouldn't turn, actually got quite upset after he saw it. He was completely unaware of the impact his strive to improve certain parts of his life was having on other parts, and he felt naturally upset about it. After a while, though, he realized, as I'm sure you will, that this was actually a good thing. Once he had realized that there was a distinct mismatch between the type of job he was doing and the other parts of his life, he was able to stop blaming the job and make necessary adjustments in order to feel better about other areas of his life. What he had done was identify which parts of his life were making him happy and identify which parts he was thinking negatively about. He was able to look at his life in a whole new light, and he started to train himself to think positively. Take a look at your own life wheel again and identify which parts of your current life that you need to improve and what steps you can make to improve them. As we move into looking, take a few moments to do this now as I'm silent. Good. Now realize that that's going to be a regular exercise for you. That's a homework assignment I want you to do every week for the next month. Once a week, draw out that circle, see where it is, and then identify the parts of your current life that you need to improve and the steps that you can take to improve them. And now we're going to move on to what positive thinking is all about. Let's look at the eternal optimist. What is optimism? The definitions can be quite diverse, and it can differ in meaning from one person to the next. The old adage of, do you see a glass as half empty or half full, is well known. If your honest answer to this question is that the glass is half empty, then it may be that you have trained your brain to think negatively. Optimism is a positive, upbeat attitude toward the world that can set you in good stead for your life, whether it's in school, your relationships, your career, or simply life in general. A great way of finding out if you are naturally an optimist or a pessimist is the test first initiated by Martin Seligman, who is widely acknowledged as the father of learned optimism. He defined optimism in terms of how we explain to ourselves the events that take place all around us, and how we see these events in terms of three dimensions: permanent or temporary, internal or external, and pervasive or specific. An optimist will take credit for the good events, being internal, and always believe that good effects will last, they will be permanent, and acknowledge that other parts of their lives will be affected. In other words, the effects will be pervasive. So an optimist is internal, permanent, and pervasive. The same optimist takes the opposing view of bad events that happen in their lives. When something bad happens, they will blame circumstances beyond their control, external. They will believe that effects will not last, that they'll be temporary, and that they are limited to this particular situation, or specific. So external, temporary, and specific. Of course, this is based on one's natural reaction to the world. Take the following example and ask yourself what your natural reaction would be if this were to happen to you. You work in a sales department for a large company. One day, one of the firm's biggest clients calls up and speaks to you. He places an order with you, which subsequently gets messed up somewhere along the line, and the order he receives is far from the one he placed. You, however, are certain that you applied due diligence when taking his order, and you're sure that you got it right. But somewhere along the line, something went wrong. The client is very unhappy about this, and he threatens to sever his ties with your company. Your boss calls you into his office and drags you over the coals for the incident. As I mentioned earlier, in today's society, we're surrounded by negativity, and often it's extremely difficult to see any good in a situation such as the one I just mentioned. But for those who are naturally disposed to optimism, that incident would not be the total disaster that it seems to be. Taking the definition of Martin Seligman, the optimist would see that the bad event, in other words, the order being messed up, happened beyond his control. He would also realize that the bad effects, in other words, getting an earful from the boss, would not last and are solely about this situation, which he had little or no control over in the first place. So the optimist will see this situation in a positive light, and in the future will take steps to make sure it doesn't happen again. For most of us, the opposite is true. We would see it as a tough day at work and go home feeling deflated and dejected. This mood will often carry on into our home life, and that evening would not be particularly happy. Remember the life wheel and how segments of our lives not only impact other segments, but they can impact other people too. This is a prime example of that happening. For the optimist, however, who has managed to see the positive side of things and realizes that it really wasn't his fault, the impact on the other parts of his life and also on those around him are minimal. This impact that we can have on the world as an optimist can have huge implications for all parts of our life wheel, since people will naturally react to positive things in a positive manner and negative things in a negative manner. So we're almost halfway through the program, and you're almost there because I want you to write down 5 more points, 5 more things that you got from the program that came to you during the second half of this module. We did this during the first half. Now I want you to do it for the second half. 5 more points that came to you during the second half of this module. Go ahead and write them down now as I'm silent. 5 things that either I said to you or that came to you while you listened. Good. Now, I want you to take point number 1 and elaborate on it as I am silent. Good. Now take point number two and fill it in. Elaborate on it. Point number two, elaborate on the point that you wrote down and make it real for you. Go ahead and involve emotion and a plan if you want to. Elaborate on point number two as I'm silent. Good. Now I want you to elaborate on point number three. Take point number three, what you got from the second half of this module, and elaborate on it as I'm silent. Good. Now take point number four and elaborate on that as I'm silent. All right, now take point number five and elaborate on point number five while I'm silent. Good. So now you have 5 points from halfway through the module, 5 points from the other half of the module, and you're only halfway through the program. You have 10 things with elaboration that you can use once you're done with this program. All right, let's get back to it. All right, you've got a lot of information in your mind now, a lot of information that's come to you, a lot of information you've heard from me. There's a lot going on in your mind. Why don't we take a moment now, make sure you're not driving during this. If you're driving, don't listen to this part. Do this part later. But if you're not driving, what I want you to do is close your eyes and let all those thoughts come to you, all those thoughts that are floating around in your head, let them come to you now. And I want you to start seeing them become organized. And I want you to start seeing them happening in your life. I want you to see them playing themselves out in your life somehow. All these ideas you have, I want you to find a place for them in your mind, whether in terms of a plan or in terms of changing something about yourself immediately, or in terms of, it could even be a vacation you're thinking of taking. But those ideas that are coming to you now as a result of listening to this material, what I want you to do with them right now, I don't want you to write anything right now. I don't want you to overthink anything. I just want you to close your eyes, as long as you're not driving. I want you to close your eyes. And as I'm silent, just use your imagination and let your imagination run wild. See where these ideas will take you. Let these ideas float around in your mind as I'm silent and really let them play out. Just let them go wild in your mind. See where they take you. As I'm silent, do this now. All right, did you enjoy that? Now, probably what happened is initially when you closed your eyes, you thought of a bunch of random thoughts and they didn't make any sense. Maybe some things were coming in that really didn't fit there. Sometimes when I close my eyes, I see all kinds of interesting images that don't have anything to do with what I'm talking about or listening to. But hopefully, after a little while, those images kind of settled down and meaningful images started to show up. Like, aha, that business idea I had, or that vacation I had, or that person I need to tell something to, or something started to develop, or maybe a series of things. When you let your imagination run wild, you often come up with ideas that you will not access if you're beating your head against the wall, if you're trying to figure something out. That's not as effective usually as just letting your mind run wild, because eventually your mind is going to settle down and is going to start giving you information that you can actually use. So I hope you use this exercise not only in this program, but outside of it as well. I once met a salesman who always had a very positive outlook on life in general, and he was a natural optimist. He was well aware of the impact that his positivity had on those around him. An example he gave to me was when he first made a call to a prospective client. He said that more often than not, when you first dealt with a company, the first person you speak to is a secretary somewhere significantly down the line from the director or CEO that you really wanted to talk to. He told me that in many cases, salespeople would fail at this first hurdle. They would find themselves speaking to a secretary somewhere down the pyramid from where they wanted to be. The negativity would creep into their voice and their body language no matter how hard they tried to prevent it from doing so. And naturally, the secretary would pick up on that. The secretary's first impression of the salesperson would therefore be a negative one, or, in the best possible case, a neutral one. When the message got passed on further up the chain, the negative message would be transmitted through the secretary's own body language and tone of voice, and so on and so on. Not only that, but often it would be amplified significantly. These people already work together, so they have no desire to make first impressions. They can say what they really want to without having to dodge around formalities. Therefore, when the message finally got to the director or CEO that the salesperson really wanted to talk to in the first place, the impression left by the salesperson could be quite negative. The salesman that I was speaking to maintained that the reason for his success did not come down to any sales patter or particular sales skill, but came down entirely to his positive thinking and positive disposition. If he spoke only to a secretary 3 or 4 steps down from the person he really wanted to speak to, then he treated them exactly as he would treat the director or CEO. The secretary would pick up on this, and by the time the person he wanted to speak to got the message about him, he was portrayed in a very glowing light indeed. As a natural optimist, he was successful because he had a positive effect on the people around him. What I found particularly interesting was that when he looked at his life wheel, he scored almost everything quite high, all between 7 and 9, except for love, which he scored at a 1. I asked him if he wanted to change anything about that, and he said no. As a confirmed bachelor, he had decided that he preferred to live alone and preferred the company of close friends to that of a loving companion. He had identified the parts of his life that needed improvement and concentrated on them, playing his strengths. He had no desire to change a part of his life that he was quite content with, as he felt that he was very happy as he was. He was, as I say, a natural optimist, and he saw all aspects of his life in a positive manner. His career, his environment, even the aspects where he wasn't particularly doing well, he still saw in a positive light. He didn't want them. So for him, the low score of 1 was actually a positive thing. In that example, I illustrated for you what it means to be an optimist and the power that that positive outlook can have on all aspects of your life. It may be that you have other aspects of your life that you have a positive or negative outlook on that we haven't covered yet. For a person who is optimistically inclined, however, it really doesn't matter. The salesman, who had a low score of 1 on his life wheel under the category of love, saw that as a positive thing. If there are any parts of your life that I haven't mentioned, then you should be feeling the same as he did, thinking positively about everything and playing to your particular strengths. So, what does an optimist look like? A great way to start is to draw a picture. It sounds a bit like going back to school, I know, but it really works. The majority of people on this planet relate to visual stimuli. So a drawing or a visual representation can be a more involved way of expressing emotions than simply writing things down. How many times have you known exactly what you wanted to say in writing a thank you note or a letter to a loved one, for example, but when faced with a blank piece of paper and a pen, you struggled to get those exact words down on paper. To start with, think of what being an optimist means to you personally and draw that picture. It can be anything. Do this now as I'm silent. Good. Now I want you to draw that same picture with negative connotations. Do this now as I'm silent.